Welcome to Eucharist Podcast, where we're exploring what it looks like for a community of disciples to live all of life in reference to Christ. So welcome back to our book discussion on For the Life of the World by Father Alexander Schmemann. So let's get into it. So this first chapter, what's some of the problems? Like, what? Why is Father Alexander writing this book? What is he addressing? What does he get into right at the beginning? What's the question that this book is the answer to, or he's trying to answer?
He's writing in the 60s at the emergence of a lot of dynamics in our culture. One of the things that's emerged in Western civilization is a strong movement towards atheistic materialism. And this is one of the major critiques against Christianity, which is that it can't seem to give an account of itself in the material world very well. And so he starts out by quoting the German materialistic philosopher Feuerbach, who is convinced that there is no such thing as spirituality, that everything that exists is actually just materiality. And so he has this whole critique where he says, you guys think you're something special, there's a spirit or whatever. No, but no, you're actually just part of nature. You are what you eat. You're a part of the material order. There's nothing else. And that's where he comes along and says, no. He's actually right in what he's saying, but he doesn't understand that he's saying something profound and deeply sacramental. So he'll come back to that. Mm. But then he looks at the Christian answer, and he says the Christian answer seems to go two directions. One is it moves towards, you could think of a sort of pure, withdrawn, disembodied spirituality, which is like, how do I recover from the hardness of my work week and the exhaustion I have? I need to go and get a spiritual renewal. I need to escape from the reality of the world I live in. So this is a very escapist spirituality. It's about kind of the pit stop model. Like I'm exhausted. I work hard all week long. I need to go somewhere and withdraw into the world of prayer and meditation in order to get my spiritual self renewed. So that's one model. And mm-hmm. he says that's not quite the right direction. There's something deeply disembodied about that. It's ignoring most of life. And then he moves and he says, well, there's another impulse, which is seen in people who are what it was in the early 20th century called the social gospel. They were said, basically, the point of Christianity is to get fired up and go out and change the social structures of society. So to feed the poor, solve problems of inequality, get out with your sign on the street and make a statement, because that's the goal of Christianity, is to change something. So it's very much utilitarian, or it's very instrumental. Like the Christian faith exists to go and do this or that. And he says both of those are wrong. There's a different way that has been forgotten, and that's what his book is about. And it's about this sacramental vision that it seems to have been lost. Do you guys want to add to that? Or I mean, how would you clarify that or sharpen it better?
No, I think you nailed it. One of the things that he talks about is how both sides of this, these two general directions in which Christianity is going, they both look on each other in an unhelpful way. Hmm. The religious people don't like that the social gospel is moving forward, and the social gospel want the religious people to repent for spending too much time in silence mm-hmm. and contemplation and not actually doing something for the mission of God.
Yeah, like in other words, the mission is out there. Let's get done with our church service and get out there and feed the poor.
Exactly.
Because that's what matters.
The thing that's happening in church is insignificant to what's happening in the world.
Yeah, and then the spiritualists are like, but you guys, how are you any different than the humanists that are out there trying to, make the world a more humane place, right?
Because the spiritual food is going to help us. You're not getting any of that spiritual food.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we see the problem he's wanting to address is this kind of polarization, or this kind of making one aspect the whole.
Right? Yeah, it's a bifurcation of reality into spiritual and material.
So spiritualism mm-hmm. and materialism, secularism and spirituality.
Religion. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is his answer? Let's take a little of this, a little of that. Let's try to find where there's touch points. What's his solution? What is he proposing as the way forward? Is he taking one side or the other?
I think the actual dichotomy between food and spirituality, materiality, is actually not that large in Alexander Schmemann's mind. Because he says, after all, that the Bible starts with man being hungry. Mm-hmm. And that in food, there is this type of communion with God. And it all depends on how you view that materiality in relationship to God. Mm.
I think, Ryan, I think at catechesis this last Sunday, you talked about like a pie chart. I think that was kind of helpful in this analogy as well.
Yeah, right? I think that in this sort of bifurcated world we live in, we tend to compartmentalize. So there's like social action. I need to get out and serve. Like how much time am I, how much percentage of my week am I serving the purposes of God in the world, by which I mean feeding the hungry, clothing those who are naked, whatever, and so on. And then on the other side, how much time do I spend in private practices of spirituality, like prayer and silence mm-hmm. and worship and taking Holy Communion? And then in the world we live in, then there's everything is compartmentalized. And so the best you can do is hope to increase that piece of the pie, which yeah. leaves mm-hmm. most of your life untouched.
So yeah, so it seems that we're living in this life where we are compartmentalizing. And like Kyle said, Father Alexander is saying, no, like it's not that broken up. There's not actually this distinction as much as we think. It's not about becoming 20% more spiritual
right.
or mm-hmm. 20% more material. It's about throwing out that whole system altogether. It's that spirituality is not a part of your life. It is your life. Materialism yeah. isn't part of your life. It is your life.
You are a material being
yeah.
who,
yeah.
that is spiritual, right?
But we yeah. don't have these compartments in like a Western two-tiered spiritual, physical, or material
yeah.
division. Like, you know, we have either hard materialists that think we're only material beings, like
yeah.
Feuerbach. And then we have, I think, often most of American Christianity, we're like, well, we are physical, but really what matters is our spirit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so really we're 100% spiritual that just happened to have a body. Like mm-hmm. I think almost a degradation of the physical state of man.
Yeah, but Schmemann yeah. would hate that.
Oh, he hates absolutely. It so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Because when God creates, he essentially blesses creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when God gives man the ability to name other things, mm-hmm. that is, in a sense, God saying, now it's your turn to bless creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so God places us on earth to be priests for him.
So, yeah, so that's like one of his arguments here early on, is he says that the role of humanity is to stand in the center of creation, he says, and to offer all of it back up to God. So now, Joshua, you have this model you've been talking about, the sort of neglected middle. Why don't yeah. you tell us about that?
Well, it explains this. One of the early things we learned when we were overseas, in studying missiology and anthropology, is that we as Westerners are kind of the exception in the West, because we'd go to these cultures and we see things like shamanism or animism or folk religion, we think or superstition or luck. And we wouldn't have the categories for it, because as a Westerner, we either have things that are purely physical mm-hmm. or purely non-material and spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have this excluded middle space, which is where all these things live.
Mm-hmm.
The shamans, the luck, the coincidence, all these things are this excluded middle. So we view the world through this bifurcated lens
mm-hmm.
of only physical or only spiritual, and there's never the two shall meet.
So it's actually interesting that in a lot of the missionary work that has been done in the last 300-400 years, missionaries have gone to cultures that actually have this middle sacramental, what we call it, yeah. understanding of creation, and they've said, oh, no, you guys are just superstitious. That doesn't actually exist.
They try to push it to the spiritual or right. bring it back to the material.
Mm. Yeah.
And they don't actually, the most effective time is when they realize, oh, wait a minute, this is where the sacraments are,
uh-huh.
you know, and this is the role mm-hmm. of the priest. This is the mitigation of Christ, our mediator
right.
between heaven and earth. This is why Christ was incarnate and not just a disembodied being
right.
and not just a wise teacher.
Right.
We need to learn this holistic view of the world where there's not these compartments. You don't have, oh, here's my physical compartment, my yeah. spiritual compartment. And then actually here's a third compartment for stuff I don't like, the catch-all drawer of like shamanism, or when I get sick,
yeah.
I'll go to the mm-hmm. doctor, I'll yeah. say a prayer, and then I'll go to this person that, you know, three times a charm. No, it's like this is the intersection of the physical mm-hmm. and the spiritual, and it's kind of mysterious at times, like
yeah.
how you know, for animists, how they manipulate the physical world to have spiritual benefits, or vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the thing that opened my eyes, and why one of the reasons I think I later became Anglican is because I like realized, oh, wait a minute, I've excluded this.
Mm.
All the other cultures include it. And then when I look back at scripture, I'm like, oh, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sacrament.
It actually is the lens through which the scriptures are written, right? It's not yeah. like it's an assumed reality in a sense. It's only us in late modern sort of post-enlightenment cultures that have stripped this away which is what we call secularism, right? Yeah. Secularism is explains why we have bifurcated realities.
And I think the incarnation is a lens that we look at through this because, you know, the church teaches us that Christ is not merely divine mm-hmm. and not merely God. There's heresies on both sides.
Right.
He's both this mysterious union where he's fully God and fully man. And I think that's kind of what Schmanman is getting about the nature of the whole world. In a way, there right. is this kind of mysterious combining.
Yeah, there's two different ways to come at this. One is to talk about a sacrament. Mm-hmm. And a sacrament is, in a sense, like the mystery of the incarnation in that it is a material reality in which we recognize that God has promised to be present. And so it is more than appears to the eye. It's not 50-50. It's not 50% bread, 50% Jesus' body. Somehow or another, it is bread and it is Jesus' body. And it is both. And of course, that's paradoxical because you can't break the... Like, it's not sharing space. They're not fighting over the same terrain. But then the sacramental view is not trying to say that that all of creation is actually God. Yeah. That would be a heresy. It would be pantheism of some kind.
Or panentheism.
Right. Right. Yeah. But it's trying to say that all of creation, when seen in right perspective, in Schmemann's language, as transparent to the glory of God... becomes a means toward communion. It's not an mm-hmm. obstacle. It's not an opposition. You bring the things that have been in tension with each other and you put them together and you see through one to the other.
And I think people intuit this in certain aspects of their life. I mean, Kyle, you're in the food business. You work at one of the best coffee shops here in the city, if not like, you know, in the Bay. There's something that's not just physical about food and drink, right?
Yeah, I think what we talk about a lot at my coffee shop is this sense of a spiritual connection to the farmers who grew the coffee. Mm. There's this long line of interconnectedness between the cup of coffee that we enjoy and the cup of coffee that's being made in, say, Honduras or in Guatemala or in Kenya. I don't think we can live in a vacuum of our own meal sitting right in front of us.
It's funny because Schmemann points this out, right? He says he calls it the last natural sacrament.
Yeah.
Even for people who are not sacramental, not even religious, they recognize there's something sacred about sitting down over food. You could just pop a pill and fulfill your dietary needs.
Yeah.
And then talk on the couch later, but that actually doesn't fulfill the same thing. There's something about the materiality and the vulnerability of being a hungry being together with another person that is connective, right?
And I mean, that's what Schmemann calls our hunger and thirst for God, whether we know it or not.
Yeah. Mm. So to go back to the food thing, this is exactly where he begins. He says food is like the place where we can begin to move into this. Mm-hmm. It's like the beachhead of understanding sacramentality and the sacramental worldview, because we all are hungry beings, as he says. Mm-hmm. And we recognize that we are finite beings that are dependent on communion, a feasting of some kind, of taking something into us. And he says, this is like a door that you can explore that takes you into the whole meaning of the Christian mm-hmm. faith, which is why right at the center of everything that we do in Christian worship and Christian life is communing. Mm-hmm. It's actually eating a meal that makes us truly human in that sense, which is beautiful when he gets there.
Well, and Schmemann talks about how the secular world is having communion with death.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, it's so good, right?
Because he talks about how food... Where do we keep our food? We put it in a refrigerator because it's dead food.
Yeah.
And that's food that doesn't sustain life. And Schmemann wants to bring to bear the type of food that does sustain life.
And it's kind of interesting if we look at the cultural tides. There is this almost re-spiritualizing or sacramentalizing of food that's happening with people that are like raw food vegans. Right. Or going back to your source.
Or like Michael Pollan.
Michael Pollan.
In his... I think we talked about it last time on the podcast.
We try to get in it every time.
Yeah. I try to. But he has this one line where he says, behind every meal there is death. And I think he's so right. And especially if you want to look at it as a Christian, he's also right there, because behind the meal of our Holy Eucharist, there is death.
Yeah. But it's a different kind of death.
It's a death that brings life.
Yes, exactly.
It's an answer to death.
It's death and resurrection, which is why when you take communion, it's not just about Jesus' death on the cross. It's also equally about his resurrection. Yeah. Because otherwise, we're just communing with more death, and, which means we're feeding off of death, and we're going to end up in the same place.
And it's God's response to death.
So he makes a transition. So he starts with food, and then in little section 3 of page 16, if anyone has a book and they're following with us, he says, it's not accidental, therefore, that the biblical story of the fall is centered again on food, which is so right, right? You start with the tree of life. There's this, which is like the original sacrament, right? Mm-hmm. All of creation is sacramental, but there's this thing that's distinctive. You have to have not just the grains in the garden to stay alive. You need to be eating from this particular tree, which is, in my mind, sort of metaphorical of, in a Christian sense, of feeding from Christ later on, right? It's like the proto-communion, proto-holy communion that we have. So, but he says, then when they ate wrongly, they ate as an end in itself. They began eating with death, and they began dying mm-hmm. immediately, and they mm-hmm. became cut off from that life, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and he says that it's not so much eating the fruit that was the fall. It was falling away from the awareness of God in all.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And I think this is, again, something that people are hungering for, but most of the time, if you don't have this framework, what you get is panentheism. Mm. You get this sentimental, God is in this cup of water, and if I just sentimentally, you know, think about this and this connection, then I'm having this kind of spiritual tingle. And I don't think he wants that either, right?
Well, I think you begin to lose the transcendence of God. If God is eminently present in all materiality, and you can't equally say that he is not.
Yeah.
Like, creation is not God. That's one of the first things we need to recognize in theology. But creation is not absent of God's mm-hmm. presence or spirituality. And I think he's trying to come back and say that as well.
I think that's a beautiful distinction, because, I mean, have you guys noticed that a little bit, like the rise of panentheism?
Yeah.
No, so not pantheism as like there's a God behind everything, but that everything is God, or God is in everything. But it's this view that is devoid of that also transcendence, and exactly what you said, it doesn't make this distinction.
That's why the incarnation in the context of the Trinity is so strategic, if I could say it that way. The Father embodies transcendence in a sense, and it is in the incarnation of the Son that immanence becomes part of the Trinitarian life. But because God isn't just one person, you could hold both ends of those poles. You have transcendence and immanence. I know I'm deep in the weeds of like theological terms, but I hope people understand what I mean.
No, but because
of
this bandwidth or this theological framework, that's why we can say, as a church, you know, Christ is among us, but he's not, because we're still calling, like, come, you know, Maranatha, come, Lord. We're waiting for the second coming, yet he's here, but not.
The absence and presence of God.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also why we can be taken up, not getting way ahead of ourselves in the story, but we can be taken up into the very life of God, into the Trinitarian reality, and yet we are never God ourselves. Mm-hmm. This is the Mormon heresy, which is like, through multiple transitions over time, eventually humanity can become God in the proper ultimate sense. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not what Christians believe. But we do believe in like what we call a divinized humanity, which is that we are taken up into the life. We're participants in the life of God, as 2 Peter 1:4, I think, or 1:5 or somewhere there, 1:3 says. And so, we never lose the distinction between us as humans and God as God, mm-hmm. even though we make our life in and through God.
How can we understand why he started here in the book? So what is he kind of starting to lay the foundation work? Why is he addressing this? Because there's probably a lot of other issues too. Like, why was this issue so important to him for what he wants to do with the rest of the book?
I guess my answer would be that he's seen how secularism has literally gutted the heart out of what the church is trying to do. And so on the one hand of secularism, you can be a materialist. On the other side, you can be a spiritualist. But right at the beating heart of what it means to be the church has been stolen in secularism. So he's trying to like take back that territory, mm-hmm. as you called it, the excluded middle. He's trying to say, no, that is where the church lives and moves and has its being.
So unless we hear him closely here with what he is saying and what he's not, we might misrepresent the book and just try to be a little bit more spiritual here, but a little bit more physical here.
Yeah.
And he's saying that we need to reorientate our whole vision of who we are and what the church is and its mission.
Which is exactly, yeah, the mission being the last word you said being so important, because we often think of mission as what the church does, which is either, again, spiritual or material, if they're bifurcated. And he's saying, no, the church is mission. It's not just what it does. It by indwelling and embodying that neglected or excluded middle, it becomes something that nothing else can be. And so that's why he talks about the church as the sacrament of creation, which he'll get into later on. So we're probably trying to spin out too many ideas in one episode here, but this is important a lot here.
To understand what he's trying to address, how he's trying to get us out of this framework of seeing the world as only these two things and not having a framework for the unification of these two seemingly opposite things.
Yeah, and for example, like Schmemann would never have a problem with science because of this, because he's not ever pitting the material versus the spiritual, which is such a problem for so many people who are trying to figure out faith, right? They're like, well, what about science? What about the dinosaurs? Or what about this and that? And it's like, he's like, no, you've already missed the sacramental view of the world when you're doing that.
Well, thanks for listening to us as we kind of get into chapter one of For the Life of the World. Next week, we're going to actually continue with chapter one because he gets into a couple other things that are going to be worth really taking the time to explore. If you want to enter into the dialogue, feel free to email us. If you're part of our parish, like let's get it together for coffee and talk about this or tea.
Or over a meal,
sacramentally, maybe. There we go. And if you haven't come already, this Sunday at 9 o'clock, we're having our catechesis, which
we're exploring our catechism
and formation time. And we're exploring this because this is
we're setting foundation. The table.
We're setting the table right now.
There we go. Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for more from the Eucharist Church podcast.